Well, I hope we all were moved by that film, because quite frankly, that was what I was intending. We saw it, and it brought back many, many, many memories to us of things we've actually seen, pieces of people we've actually sat down with in situations which were like that and even worse. I can think of one specific case, if I think of two or three specific cases that have been actually worse than that, where there's no latrine at all. But if you turn with me to Isaiah chapter 42. You see, God sees, Jesus Christ sees, he knows what's going on. At this present time, we're looking at Kibera, it's probably about 10 o'clock at night, something like that. They're going into the twilight areas. But Isaiah 42, verse 1, it says, "Behold my servant whom I uphold, my elect, to whom my soul delights. I have put my spirit upon him, he shall bring forth judgment to the Gentiles." The judgment will actually be on that area. The judgment will come down into that area around Nairobi in Kenya, and judgment will be on Kibera. The judgment as far as God is concerned. "He shall not cry, nor lift up, nor cause his voice to be heard in the street. A bruised reed shall he not break, and the smoking flax he will not quench." Now when Christ came the first time, he didn't go ahead and sort these problems out. Kibera is still here today. We were able to, the BBC were able to go down there and actually do the filming. It hasn't yet been sorted. The kingdom of God is not now. It's not a present, what is it, what they used to say, a present reality and a future hope, or something the other way around, whichever they used to be able to actually say. It is not here. It is yet to come. It's a present hope. It's a future reality. "The smoking flax shall he not quench. He shall bring forth judgment unto truth. But he shall not fail, nor be discouraged, until he has set judgment in the earth." So eventually this is going to come. The judgment on Kibera, on the areas like Kibera. And as I say, we're looking at about 50% plus of the world that lives in a situation something along that line. It's not exactly like that, but along those lines. That is the kind of existence that people have. It's literally hand to mouth. It's not just kind of you don't have any money in the bank. I mean, they don't have any money in the bank anyway. But it is literally hand to mouth. "But he has set judgment in the earth, and the isles shall wait for his law." And in verse 11 it says, "Let the wilderness and the cities thereof lift up their voice, the villages that Kedar does inhabit." Kedar is the Bedouin tribes inhabit. "Let the inhabitants of Petra sing." That's what the Greek would be for the rock. "Let them shout from the top of the mountains. Let them give glory to the Eternal and declare his praise in the islands. The Eternal shall go through forth as a mighty man. He'll stir up jealousy like a man of war. He shall cry and roar. He shall prevail against his enemies. I've a long time held my peace. I've been still. I've refrained myself. But now I'll cry like a travailing woman." In other words, he's put up with watching this kind of thing that you have just been seeing for year after year after year. And that's just the tip of the iceberg of what's going on in the world. But eventually, he's going to act. Eventually, he says he's going to cry like a travailing woman, and he's going to go in there and sort the problems out. He says, "I'll destroy and I'll devour at once. I'll make waste mountains and hills and dry up all their herbs. I'll make the rivers islands. I'll dry up their pools. And I will bring the blind by a way they do not know. I'll lead them in paths that they have not known. I'll make in darkness light before them, and crooked places straight. And the things that I will do unto them and not forsake them." So eventually the people that will be there will actually see a great light. They'll actually be able to see the path of their feet. And there are two things that really is needed there more than anything else. Yes, they definitely need the Spirit of God and a change of heart. That's being put to one side, if you like. Without that, they will not understand these two things. But the two things that are needed to be brought to them are government and education. Government and education are crucial for the world tomorrow. Kibera is not going to get sorted without government and education. The right kind of government is absolutely vital. And the areas I want to go into, really, I want to talk about government and education, yes. I want to talk about the family-based society. Because it's a family-based society. It's the family that is part of the education that's needed. It will solve an awful lot of those problems, AIDS included. if it's understood properly. And it's also going to be made, and we are going to be instrumental in making it an age of opportunity. You know, the people there, they literally didn't have the opportunity to get out of what they're in. And okay, Lenny Henry went ahead and bought a place for the orphans that were there. But you know, who's going to move into the place they left? Which family came out of the place they were going into? All it's done is shuffle people around. It's given that family a little bit extra, and you know, fair play, I can understand him doing that. But it hasn't actually solved anything. The solution is not there. It's not throwing money at the solution, isn't the solution. Government and education is the solution. You know, about a couple of hundred miles north of that area in Nairobi is another area called the Daab, and that is an area near the Somalia border. We were actually within about 200 miles of the Somalia border earlier in the year. We went to a place called Isiolo up in that particular area. But there is another camp, not quite the same as that, because it's not as crowded, but it's a camp that has grown up because of the Somalia problem and the Somalia fighting that's going on in there. And they're fleeing from Somalia and coming into Daab. And there, the population is about 300,000 at the moment in that one camp. It's growing at about 1,000 a day. It's growing at 1,000 a day as they spill over from Somalia. And there was an article I read about, it was actually a book I've been reading called The Crisis Caravan, What's Wrong with Humanitarian Aid? Because it's easy to think we can go down, we can solve it, and you may feel, in the future, you may feel that the solution is, we go in there, we give everybody money. That's not the solution. That's not where it's at. It's education, it's government that's needed. Let me give you an example from this book by a lady called Linda Pullman, and she has been around as a journalist in these aid camps and seen firsthand what the real problems are. She says, imagine that you're an international humanitarian aid worker. This is the way she begins a book. In a war zone, unfaithful to the principles of the Red Cross, as any good humanitarian should be. In other words, you're impartial, you're neutral, you're independent. It's your responsibility to relieve human suffering, irrespective of the people involved and the situation on the ground. Now, this was the idea that behind the person that started the Red Cross, Henry Dunant, who basically started it about the same time as Florence Nightingale. Florence Nightingale in the Crimean War was looking after British soldiers, and Henry Dunant was looking after French soldiers around about that same time. But there's a slight difference between the approach of the two individuals. Florence Nightingale put pressure on the British government to then take over the job. Henry Dunant said that they would go ahead and help whoever came through the doors. And that is the ethos of the Red Cross, and that's the ethos of the humanitarian movements that we've got today. This time your mission has taken you to a refugee camp in Darfur, up in Ethiopia. You do what you can for the victims, but soldiers exploit your efforts. They demand money from every well that you dig. So every well you dig, wherever you happen to be, they want the money. They want to cream off some of the profits. They levy sky-high taxes, imposed on the spot on all the sacks of rice and the tent and the medicines that you arrange to have flown in. They consume a slice of your aid supplies, and then they sell another slice, and among the items that they buy with the proceeds are weapons. So what are you doing as an aid worker? What are you really doing as an aid worker? Are you helping the situation? Or are you arming the very people that's causing the situation in the first place? So among the items they buy with the proceeds are weapons, which they use to drive yet more people into your refugee camps and even to their deaths. What do you do? Do you conclude that it is no longer possible to cling to the principles of the Red Cross, pack your bags and leave to help war victims elsewhere? Or do you remain true to your convictions, believing that even if you save only one human life, some relief is better than none? You move one family away from what you've seen. It is government that is necessary. It is education that is necessary. And you have the solution being preached to you every single Sabbath day. The solution is the kingdom of God. It's the government of the kingdom of God on this earth. That's the solution. It's the education of the law of God and the imposition of that law and the understanding of the spirit of that law that will be actually given into the entirety of the earth. And that's the reason why we're here. We're not playing church. We're not playing church. Let me read you another one. And this one is, again, she was there. She was at this particular problem site, and it was a Goma. Now, Goma is down in Rwanda. Now, we have some brethren living at Fort Portal in Uganda. We don't go down to Fort Portal to see them. We've flown into Entebbe, which is on the shore of Lake Victoria in Uganda, and we have them come to see us in Entebbe. Or we go to Kisumu, which is again on the shore, but that's on the Kenyan side, and we have them come across the Kenyan border and see them there. But Fort Portal is right close to Rwanda. And here this lady was writing. She says, April 1995, from the battered road barrier of the Rwandan side of the border in the open plain crowded with refugees on the Zairean side, because Zaire, the Congo, comes in they all meet in that area. And it's quite rich in minerals in that area, and a lot of trouble has been in that area. Crowded with refugees on the Zairean side with a walk of perhaps half a mile. Above my negotiations with the Zairean border guards, I could already hear the sound made by 750,000 camp dwellers, a threatening hum as if a giant wasp's nest awaited me. I'd covered 300 yards through muddy puddles and past deep ruts in the road. She's going, therefore, from Zaire, she's going into Rwanda. She's actually crossing the border. Just a few hundred yards from where she was coming into Zaire, and she could see Rwanda on the other side. She's going across along this muddy road. When a man on a bicycle slowed down to ride next to me at walking pace. Taxi? The cyclist asked. No, I'm just about there now, I answered. Ah, so you know where they are today, the man in African spoke in French. Where what are? I asked him. Good, so you don't. He was wearing a tattered jacket and pedalling with bare feet. The mines. You don't know where they are today. Every night we put them in a different puddle or a crack in the tarmac. Only yesterday a white woman from America, a refugee committee, found one. Boom, both legs blown off. You better ride with me. I'm Hutu. Hutu is the tribe. He's a Hutu. I help lay the mines. Get on, please. And he pointed invitingly to his luggage rack. So he'd laid the mines that night, and it goes on, it says, the mining of the road by the Hutus in the camps, was part of a military strategy, he explained. Quote, the hidden explosives are there to make sure that the cockroaches don't dare come and attack us. By cockroaches, he meant the Rwandan Tutsis. And they used to come out of the camp, the Hutus would come out of the camp, go back into Rwanda, murder the Tutsis, and then come back to the camp again. And who was financing it? The humanitarian aid workers. And the people in the West who were trying to do something about what they'd see on the television screens. It's not money. It's government. It's education. That's what's needed. By cockroaches he meant the Rwandan Tutsis, compatriots of his but from a different ethnic group. The mines also served to persuade any Hutus considering going back to Rwanda to think twice or three times about it. Not there are as many of those, mind you, the traitors who want to go and live with the cockroaches again, he assured me. But that is the problem. It's government and education. Turn over to Hebrews chapter 5. Hebrews chapter 5. I thought it was worthwhile. You know, I debated whether, in fact, to show that film because it is so gut-wrenching. I thought, at the feast, you know, do you really want to be having a gut-wrenching film like that to be shown at the feast? But I think it's necessary that we just really do understand what we are involved in. It is the conversion of the entire earth. And when I say conversion, I mean that being converted, that being changed. And it's only, you know, my wife and I have gone into some of these places. We've sat down with some of these people. We've talked to them. We know what their problems are. I would say that most of you, I don't know whether any of you, quite frankly, have ever actually sat in a place like that. I doubt if you have. But in Hebrews 5, it says in verse 10, it says, called of God a high priest after the order of Melchizedek. Now the high priest is of an order of Melchizedek. And I say, government and education, what is that? Kings and priests. What is the order of Melchizedek? It's the king of Salem, priest of our most high God. The high priest of after the order of Melchizedek, the king priests that will be under that high priest are you and me, if we make it and we qualify to be able to be part of that government. And that is necessary, that we are in this life now to qualify for positions in that government. Not to actually make it, you know, to gain salvation, that's a gift. But the position that we held, that we hold at that time, is going to be determined by what we do with the information that we've got in this life. Therefore, it's a real... As I say, we're not playing church. This is not a game. This is very real. You know, Christ didn't die for no reason. He died to allow us to gain access to the Father, to be changed, to be converted into different individuals ready to be used in the future to put right the things that we see in this world today. He says, called of God a high priest after the order of Melchizedek, the king priestly high order, of whom we have many things to say and hard to be uttered, seeing you are dull of hearing. So the Hebrews that he was writing to say, look, they're not really getting it. They're not really understanding. For when the time that you ought to be teachers, you have need that one teach you again that which was the first principles of the oracles of God, and have become such that have need of milk and are not of strong meat. So it is necessary that we also take this to heart. You know, he was criticizing the Hebrews of his day. Each one of us, you know, we need to make sure that we do focus and we understand that we are being trained to be teachers, king priests, education, government. That is what we're involved in. For everyone that uses the milk is unskilled in the word of righteousness, for he's a babe. It's being using that word of righteousness as part of the education that is there to make the decisions necessary as far as the kingship that is there. But strong meat belongs to those that are of a full age, even to those who by reason of use have their senses exercised to discern both good and evil. Now, to discern both good and evil, so that when you see something, you say, look, this is the way, walk in it, when they turn right and when they turn left, as it says over in Isaiah. That's what our job needs to be done. You know, somebody going to go ahead and start another Kabira? A voice behind them from the teachers needs to say, look, that's not the way. But do we know what the way is? Do we understand what the way is? Why does that exist? Why will that never exist within the world tomorrow? What laws will be imposed? How is the problems that we see there? What are we going to do? What are we going to use to be able to actually not allow, to stop that ever rising again? Let's turn over to Psalm 2. Psalm 2, and just remind ourselves about the government of God that will have to come. As I say, it is a governmental problem. There's got to be the force necessary there to solve the problem. Now, the education has got to be there as well. Without the education, you're not going to solve the problem. You're just going to perpetuate another one. But it says here in Psalm 2, here we see the rule that is going to have to come to this earth. And we've just read over in Isaiah 42, how Christ, when he returns, it'll be like a travailing woman. A woman in travail, that he'll say, look, now we've got to sort these things out. And he'll come in as a conquering hero and wipe out those that will oppose him. It talks about Psalm 110, about the bodies being piled in the streets of the people that are actually in opposition to him. And it says here in Psalm 2, it says, why do the heathen rage? And the people imagine a vain thing. The kings of the earth set themselves, the rulers take counsel together against the Eternal and against his anointed, his Christ, saying, let us break their bands asunder, cast away their cords from us. You read Romans 1 and you see that is the way that the world is. the elections that it mentions there, that Bernard, remember, had his father killed when he went to actually see the result of the elections. Judy and I were actually in Nairobi. We flew out of Nairobi a matter of a week, between a week and 2 weeks, before those elections really hit. And then from that point on into January, that was in December. And in January, I was in contact with people who were on the ground fleeing from the youth groups which were going around with machetes killing people. You know, it gets very close to... And these were members in Kenya. So, let us break their bands asunder, cast away their cords from us. You see, there's got to be government. And the government is not the government of this world, because that's what it produced. The orphans there are the result of that government, the governmental elections that actually took place. He that sits in the heaven shall laugh, the Lord shall have them in derision. Then he'll speak unto them with his wrath, and vex them with his sore displeasure. Yes, I've set my king, a king made after the order of Melchizedek, on my holy hill of Zion. Zion being the church, and Zion being the location where the church will help that king and rule from in the millennium. I will declare the decree, says the Eternal, has said to me, you are my son, and this day have I begotten you. Ask of me, and I will give you the heathen of an inheritance, and the uttermost parts of the earth for your possession. So he will rule over Kibera. And Kibera will be sorted out. It is going to be sorted out. You shall break them with a rod of iron. You shall dash them in pieces like a potter's vessel. Be wise now, therefore, you kings. Now, kings on the earth, yes, be wise, keep your head down, because you'll lose that head if you don't. But it's also the kings that will be assisting the Melchizedek high priest as king priests themselves. The ones that are being trained within the church. The ones being trained to be teachers. That's why we're here. To learn God's law in the spirit and the understanding of God's law. It's not just the letter of the law that you go down and you tick off. It's the principle behind it. It's the thinking of God. The way our mind has got to work has got to be the same way God's mind works. That's what Mr. Armstrong was continually on about. That's continual, you know, everything. The way of give, the way of get, the two trees. It's the principle of God's law, the understanding of the way God's mind works, a God being's mind works. Be wise now, therefore, you kings. Be instructed, you judges of the earth. And the judges of the earth are going to be the church. Serve the Eternal with fear and rejoice with trembling. Kiss the Son, lest he be angry, and you perish from the way when his wrath is kindled but a little. And blessed are all those that put their trust in him. See, we have got to be obedient to that government ourselves. And we've got to be obedient to what, in fact, Jesus Christ stands for at this present time. This is why we need to make sure we do put ourselves under the spiritual heritage that we've been given. Because it did not come from Mr. Herbert Armstrong. It came via him, but it did not come from him. It came from Jesus Christ. And that's why we need to be make sure that we're under that spiritual heritage, so that we can then take that spiritual heritage and administer that spiritual heritage in the world tomorrow as the teachers and apply it properly, apply it the way that we've been taught. Turn over to Ezekiel chapter 38. I mean, what is it about Kibera that is so incredibly wrong? Why should that not exist at all under any circumstances? Well, what kind of place is the world going to be at that time? In the millennial rule. And here we see, and remember, understand that Ezekiel 37 is the Valley of Dry Bones. He now looks back from the Valley of Dry Bones, which is the second resurrection, the resurrection at the end of the 1,000 years, at the 100-year period, just before the 100-year period, and he's then looking backwards in time. He's looking back through the millennium, and he sees what he says, Gog and Magog, that comes against the Israel at the end of the millennium first, because he's looking backwards in time, and then he sees Gog and Magog coming against ultimately Christ as he returns at the beginning of the millennium. So he's looking back both ways. So the first one he deals with is the end of the millennium. That's what he's looking at.
So here in chapter 38 of Ezekiel, in verse 8, it says, "After many days you'll be visited. In the latter years you will come into the land that is brought back from the sword." So this is at the end of the millennium now. This is taking place. "And is gathered out of many people against the mountains of Israel, which have been always waste, but is brought now forth out of the nations, and they'll dwell safely, all of them." So here is Israel dwelling safely in his land. And it says, "You shall ascend and come like a storm. You shall be like a cloud and cover the land, and all your bands and many people with you. Thus says the Lord Eternal, it shall come to pass that at the same time shall things come into your mind, and you will think an evil thought." That's because Satan is going to be released for a little season right at the end of the millennium. And the spirit that broadcasts today will again broadcast, and that will then come into his mind. That will then produce this problem that we see here. "And you shall say, I will go up again up to," what is he going up to? "The land of unwalled villages." So Israel, at the end of the millennium, will be a land of unwalled villages. Now, there are rules and regulations within the law of God regarding unwalled villages. And if we could go back to Leviticus 25, we can actually see some of these rules and these regulations in Leviticus chapter 25, specifically concerning the Jubilee, which was brought out in the split sermon yesterday. But here in Leviticus 25, notice over in verse 9, it says, "Then you will cause the trumpet of the Jubilee to sound on the 10th day of the 7th month. In the Day of Atonement shall you make the trumpet sound throughout all your land." And I think that is significant. It is on that particular day, on the day when Satan is depicts that Satan is going to be restrained and put into the abyss and can, you know, go out and deceive the nations no more, that this law actually is implemented. The Jubilee is actually implemented on that day. And it says, "And you shall hallow the 50th year and proclaim liberty throughout all the land and to all the inhabitants thereof, including the people of Kibera, incidentally, and of Dadaur, the various other camps that are scattered across this earth at this present time. It shall be a jubilee unto you, and you shall return every man to his possession, and you shall return every man to his family." Because the families own the land. They're the ones who own they own the land under God. They, if you like, have a leasehold on it. They cannot get rid of it, and it goes back to the family every 50 years. The Jubilee causes that to take place. In verse 17, "You shall not therefore oppress one another, but you shall fear your God, for I am the Eternal your God." The land that is under Kibera could never become what it is today. It just can't, because it goes back to the family. It's owned by a family. It's a family farm. The family will farm it. They'll not degenerate into a site like that. Remember, it's unwalled villages. It's not part of Nairobi. It's on the outskirts of Nairobi. You drive past it as you go out of Nairobi. In verse 23, it says, "The land shall not be sold forever, for the land is mine, and you are strangers and sojourners with me." As I say, it's like a leasehold that's given to the families. But it's given to the families. It's not given to just whoever for as long as they want. "And in all the land of your possession, you will grant a redemption for the land, a buying back." So it goes back to the family that is necessary. Notice in verse 31, "Notwithstanding the cities of the Levites, the houses of the cities," "but the houses of the villages, which have no wall around," and remember, it was unwalled villages, a land of unwalled villages, it was a description of Israel at the end of the millennial rule, "shall be counted as the field of the country. They may be redeemed, and they shall go out in the Jubilee." So in other words, they can be bought back by the family at any time throughout the 50 years, if somebody comes and redeems that land. And come the Jubilee, it goes back to the family completely free of charge. And the family then own that land again. So what we're looking at is the land is going to be owned by families. You can't have a ghetto that springs up on a land of unwalled villages. That one law alone is going to solve the problem of Kibera. You're not going to have the kind of slum dwelling in Kibera. It just isn't going to be possible. besides which, the mindset of God is not going down that route. We're going to transform the actual entirety of the earth into something that resembles Eden. And Eden did not look like Kabira. Guaranteed. It didn't look like Kabira. If you put in your notes Isaiah 5:8, it talks about that we should not be building house to house. We should not be building field to field. There's got to be a way, some passage between the houses, between the fields, that allows a passage of people, a flow of people between the two areas. If we go over to Mark chapter 6, there's something else as well that is necessary within this land owned by families. But in Mark chapter 6, we see the mind of Christ, Jesus Christ, and the way in which he looked at things. It's interesting that when you're looking at Kenya, one thing about Kenya which I find very, very difficult is the names. It's incredible. You know, trying to find out, because they don't have surnames the same as you and I do. And the reason for that is that the chiefs and big men of the villages would have several wives. So instead of having surnames, they would have something like, he was born on a Tuesday, or born in the morning, or something like this. And I, to this day, I don't know how to properly address a Kenyan. I have tried to get, to get information as to how properly to address, how to write, Mr. So-and-so. Well, it's Mr. Jonathan. It's not Mr. Bowles, it's Mr. Jonathan. So how do you deal with this? And it is because of this this problem. And it is because of the loose family ties, and the family ties are not... You don't have a great-grandfather that can trace your roots. It's done in this way because of the... Well, it's done in this way, to be blunt, because of the occult. That's why. It's because of the astrology. It's because if you're born on a morning on a Thursday, then the spirits are with you in a certain way, as opposed to somebody who's born in the afternoon on a Saturday. Therefore, that's very important, and that's the way that they name themselves. And the result of that... We have been in areas where 40% of the population have AIDS. 40% of the population. I was thinking of one area on Lake Victoria we went to. It's just astounding figures. But here in Mark chapter 6, in verse 31, he said to them, "Come yourself apart." Now, what had happened is John the Baptist had just lost his head, and obviously it was upsetting many of his disciples who previously been with John the Baptist, quite frankly, a number of them. And he said to them, "Come yourselves apart to a desert place and rest a while, for there were many coming and going, and they hadn't even leisure so much as to eat. And they departed then to a desert place by ship privately." So he recognized the need to get away from it all. Now, if you're living in a place like Kabira, where do you go? Where do you go? In a big city, even the big cities today, quite frankly, they're not of God. They're not God's way. It's not God's mind. You need to somewhere to go in the earth. In other words, you don't lay house to house. You don't lay field to field. So there's no way in the earth. So there's not somewhere you can get away from it all and just spend some time in meditation and reflective prayer, quite frankly. And yet this is what we've got. This is the mind. He shows us the mind of Christ, the mind of God. Turn over to Hebrews chapter 12, because... this idea of the land being owned by families also carries with it a solution to the prostitution that we find within these places. And the first contact with Kabira is concerned, my wife and I, when we stayed in a Nairobi hotel, almost guaranteed, obviously you can't travel with a suitcase and for 2, 3, 4 weeks, well, it's not as long as that, 2 weeks anyway. You can't travel with that length of time in a tropical climate without having your clothes washed. So you give the clothes to be washed to the hotel porter or whoever. Who actually does the washing? In Nairobi, there'll be people from Kabira. So we've had our clothes washed by people from in the areas you've been seeing. That's where they come from. That's where it comes from. But here in Hebrews chapter 12, there's an attitude of mind that we've got to understand, that if you understand that the land is owned by families, you don't have the Kenyan mentality of naming without the families. You've got to understand there's a succession of families, because the families are crucial. The families own the land. That's the way. That's the way of God. The families own the land. The families have been given custodianship of the land. And what do we find? We find here in verse 14, follow peace with all men, and holiness, without which no man shall see the Lord. Looking diligently, lest any man fail of the grace of God, let any roots of bitterness springing up trouble you, and thereby many be defiled. In other words, we're going in a direction which is against God. Lest there be any fornicator or profane person. Now notice what he's saying. Fornicator or profane person. Did Esau have fornication? Not that we see, but notice it says, fornicator or profane person as Esau, who for one morsel of meat sold his birthright. A fornicator is spreading his seed around to sell his birthright. His birthright to his progeny is not going to go there. That's the problem. You mess about with the family structure, you take the family away from the land, and you start to go down to the Kiberia area of prostitution. That's where it comes from. You want to get it put back again, you get the family back in the land again, and it therefore becomes important, because you know who is the progeny is, and their roots, and where all that their roots come from. It actually ties into the very land and the entire wealth of the nation. So you put it right. You put it right in one area, and it affects another area, totally unrelated in that sense, by you know, from a human way of looking at it. But it's not a human way of looking at it. It's God's way of looking at it. It would actually solve this prostitution problem that is, which is there. Notice if we turn back to Psalm 68, what's going to take place in Psalm 68? What's going to take place in the future is that the orphans, and there are going to be orphans when we first start the millennium. There are going to be many, many orphans. If 9/10 of the population, at a conservative estimate, have died, then how many orphans are going to be? And you and I are going to have to deal with that. How are we going to deal with it? What's the answer? What's the solution to it? What were you going to do? Put them into somewhere like that? Or get them a nicer home like Lenny Henry did? Is that the answer? Well, look, notice what it says in chapter 68, or Psalm 68, verse 1. Let God rise, let his enemies be scattered, let them also that hate him flee before him. As smoke is driven away, so drive them away. As wax melts before the fire, so let the wicked perish at the presence of God. And here is the returning Christ now. But let the righteous be glad. Let them rejoice before God, let them be exceedingly rejoice. Sing to God, sing praises to his name, extol him that rides upon the heavens by his name, Yah, and rejoice before him. A father of the fatherless, and a judge of the widows is God in his holy habitation. So he's going to be a father of the fatherless, he's going to be a judge of the widows, he's going to give the families, put the families back together and put the even keel behind all people. Notice what it says. God sets the solitary in families. So what would happen to Bernard and his family? It's put into a family. It might increase some of the size of these families are going to be pretty big probably, but it's going to be put into families. That's our job. That's part of our job. That's what the way in which some of these orphan problems are going to have to be solved. Because it's within a family that you learn the lessons of family life. And you put a stop to the problems that lead eventually into prostitution, into the various problems that you've got and that we witnessed in the film. So he sets the solitary in families, he brings out those who are bound with chains and the rebellious dwell in the dry land. So we see Christ, the other thing that we've got to make sure we understand is that Christ and the church is the example of the family life. And that is also going to be able to be seen at that time. What we need to do, the other thing we need to do, in addition to causing the family life to be emphasized, to bring people back into families, which will then stop the prostitution and the other problems that are there, and at the same time cause the land ownership to be correctly administered and the time of the Jubilee to be able to put the land back into the families again. The other thing that we need to be able to do is to make it a land of opportunity, a true land of opportunity. And people, the rap artist, I'm not suggesting that the music is the kind of stuff that I would choose necessarily, but nevertheless, the opportunity that needs to be there. I know my mother got me to take piano lessons at the age about 7 years old. And the reason for that is that they looked at me at about age of three on a piano, and they thought, well, perhaps his talents are going in that direction. And the reason is, yours truly could sing Humpty Dumpty Sat on a Wall, and as Humpty Dumpty came off that wall, so all the piano keys got hit all the way down to the bottom. And he reckoned that was expressive enough that we'll get him piano lessons and actually see and make him able to play Humpty Dumpty in the proper way. So as you probably see, I can play Humpty Dumpty in the proper way most of the time. But the age of opportunity. Turn over to John chapter 14. John chapter 14. You see, again, where is that coming from? It's coming from a family. In a family, they notice how the children are growing up and the opportunities that are necessary there. So the encouragement that we have to have as people who are over, as king priests, over the world, is to encourage that family life, is to point people in that family direction, to give that age of opportunity. But here in John 14, we see the same mentality coming out of Christ himself. It says, "Let not your heart be troubled. You believe in God, you believe also in me. In my Father's house are many mansions," or positions are probably better translated. "If it were not so, I would have told you, but I'm going to prepare a place for you." It's an opportunity, according to our own abilities, that God will actually prepare a place for us, to put us in that place and allow us to actually fulfill the potential that we have got on an individual basis. But the understanding is that if that's the way our high priest operates, is that the way our elder brother, our husband-to-be operates, it's also the way that we should be operating as well when we come to the time in the future. That we will try and prepare a place for everyone that's put into our charge, that we give them the opportunities and make the opportunities available. "And if I go and prepare a place for you, I'll come again and receive you to myself, that where I am, they may be there you may be also." And that place is certainly a case of a life, having life and having it more abundantly, as it says in John 10:10. That having it life and having it more abundantly is what we are then offering the people in our charge. And again, it's a part of the opportunity that is there. Now, the wisdom that is going to be needed, turn over to Isaiah 32. Because when we're looking at Kibera, as I've said before, it is a governmental problem. The government allows Kibera to exist. Why? Because it forms the workforce that actually works in the government employees' homes. They work in the homes. They provide the service to wash the clothes in the hotels and bring money, therefore, into the country. It's all enmeshed. The whole thing is enmeshed into a filthy mess that you see, that we've seen and witnessed today. But in Isaiah 32, it says in verse 1, it says, "Behold, a king shall reign in righteousness, and princes shall rule in judgment." The king priests are those princes working with that king. "And a man shall be as a hiding place from the wind and a covert from the tempest, as rivers of water in a dry place and the shadow of a great rock in a weary land. And the eyes of those that see shall not be dim, and the ears of those that hear shall listen. The heart also of the rash shall understand knowledge, and the tongue of the stammerer shall be ready to speak plainly." In other words, we'll put things back onto the even keel. We'll give the understanding there, and there'll be the Spirit of God poured out on all flesh, and therefore they will be able to understand the teaching that will come from the king priests. But I want you to notice, there's a bit more to it than that. It says, "The vile person shall no more be called liberal." The politicians that caused Bernard's father to be killed, and they the entire mayhem that occurred within Kenya, they're not going to be called liberal anymore, because they aren't. They're the instruments of the problem in many cases. The vile person shall no more be called liberal, nor the curl said to be bountiful. For the vile person will speak villainy, and his heart will work iniquity, to practice hypocrisy, to error against the eternal, to make empty the soul of the hungry, and he'll cause the drink of the thirsty to fail. In other words, he'll be labelled for what he is. At that time, we will have the ability to see people's hearts. Now, how that works, I don't know. But certainly Christ could do it. And if he as the high priest will be able to do it, so will the king priests under him. We'll be able to look into the heart of man and see what is really going on. The instruments also of the curl are evil. He devises wicked devices to destroy the poor with lying words, even when the needy speaks right. But the judgment, which will come from the spirit-born king priests, will be able to actually see through that. But the liberal, that's the truly liberal now, devises liberal things, and by liberal things shall he stand. He's able to, we should be able to see right through the problems. Now, to give you an idea of what kind of problems are there, let me quote another section from this book, The Crisis Caravan. And he's talking about corporate fraud and corruption. The corporate fraud and corruption within these agencies, these NGOs, the non-government organizations, or INGOs, international non-government organizations. It says another example, he's talking about Afghanistan and the money that's been poured from this country into Afghanistan. Okay? Another example was given by Claire Lockhart, advisor to the United Nations in Afghanistan from 2001 to 2005. She investigated a house building project in Bamiyan province. It began in the summer of 2002 with $150 million in the kitty. First, the money was transferred by donor governments to an aid agency in Geneva, which allocated 20% to its own organization and then handed over the implementation of the project to an organization in Washington, D.C. So you lose 20% down there, then it goes across the Atlantic and it goes across to Washington, D.C., having been given by the donor governments. The agency, that agency, also kept 20% for itself and passed the job to another organization, which kept 20% and subcontracted the task of implementation once more. And this is a real case. This is not just some kind of something somebody's dreamt up. This is a documented case within Afghanistan with a $150 million budget. And it's a house-building project, okay? With the money that was left, the final organization in the sequence bought a consignment of wooden beams in neighboring Iran. It was delivered to Afghanistan by a transport company owned by the governor of Bamiyan province. So the governor owned the transport for five times the normal freighting fee. When at last the beams arrived at the villages selected to receive the aid, they turned out to be too heavy for the loam walls of Afghanistan houses, so it couldn't be used. The villagers decided the best thing to do with the timber was to chop it up and use it as fuel for their cooking fires. And that was $150 million used as fuel for the cooking fires. As it says here, it says, "For the vile person will speak villainy, his heart will work iniquity," verse 6, "to practice hypocrisy." In other words, you can see the villainy there. And it will be labelled as such. It's not going to be labelled as liberal. Oh, somebody giving $150 million, isn't this wonderful to all these poor people in Afghanistan? And 20%, 20%, 20%, 20%, a transport company getting inadequate beams, hasn't been properly looked at and used as firewood. And that was just one of them. I tell you, some of them I wouldn't get up here and read. I mean, quite frankly, what took place in Sierra Leone was just beyond belief. And it was fueled by the BBC. And the BBC coverage caused the mayhem and the maiming of children and everything else. I mean, just vile. Absolutely vile. But it says here, the instrument or foil of the curl are evil. He devises wicked devices to destroy the poor with lying words. But the truly liberal, verse 8, devises liberal things, and by liberal things will he stand. And in verse 17, and the work of righteousness shall be peace, the effect of righteousness, quietness and assurance forever. That's what's needed, is government and education from king and priests. That's what is needed. And my people shall dwell in a peaceable habitation, and sure dwellings, and a quiet resting place. And when it shall hail, and that's one of the final, the final plague, when it shall hail, coming down of the forest, and the city will be low in a low place. Blessed are you that sow beside all waters. The very Spirit of God is poured out on all flesh, and we will then be able to go out there and sow the Word of God and have the Word understood by the people that listen to it. That send forth there the feet of the ox and the ass. Now, the feet of the ox and the ass is a euphemism, apparently in Hebrew, for prosperity. So you go out and you send forth the prosperity that is there in a genuine way into the actual nations, and allow those nations to become the kind of people that they need to become. Give them it's an age of opportunity, and we are the ones to make it that age of opportunity that is necessary. And I'll just quote, put in your notes, 2 Thessalonians 3, verse 11. It talks about if any won't work, then neither should he eat. That principle will apply in the future. It needs to apply. And the context of that verse is within the church, that we should be working, we should be being productive. Let's have a look at just a few scriptures, therefore, in closing. Over in Leviticus 19, first of all. And just see some of the things that we see the mind of God, the mind of Christ that gave these words in the first place, as to how we have people looking after themselves, yes, and being productive and having an age of opportunity and the opportunities that are there for the poor. And let's just skip over, just hit the high spots of this. That's Leviticus 19, notice in verse 9. It says, and when you reap the harvest of your land, you will not wholly reap the corners of your fields, neither shall you gather the gleanings of your harvest. So in other words, the corners are left, as it says here. And you shall not glean the vineyard, in verse 10, neither shall you gather every grape of your vineyard. You will leave them for the poor and the stranger. I am the Eternal, your God. So you don't go ahead and harvest the corners of the field. They are left for the poor. And the poor can then go in there and help themselves. The poor also, you don't go ahead and, after you've taken the crop off, you leave any gleanings there. You don't go ahead and go over a second time to go ahead and get the gleanings. You leave the gleanings there so that the poor can come in and make use of the gleanings. And we see that in the case of Ruth, where she did that in Boaz's fields. Turn over to Deuteronomy 14. Again, hitting the high spots as we go through, and just notice some of the ideas and the mindset of God in ancient Israel as to what will happen in the future as well. It will be something along these lines. And it says in verse 28 of Deuteronomy 14, and at the end of 3 years shall you bring forth all the tithe of your increase the same year, and you shall lay it up within your gates. And the Levite, because he doesn't have part or inheritance with you, and the stranger and the fatherless and the widow which are within your gate shall come, and they'll eat and be satisfied, that the Eternal your God may bless you in all the work that your hand that it does. So third tithe is going to be used. And third tithe will be made available for the poor. That they can come to somebody's house and say, do you have any third tithe? And they say, yes, we do. Here it is. And that is the welfare system. And it's something, a welfare system that will be taken care of. It's not something that administered at great government expense with great huge departments. It is something that is automatic. It's something that takes place automatically within the land. Chapter 15. At the end of every 7 years, you will make a release. And this is the manner of the release. Every creditor that lends anything to his neighbour shall release it, and shall not exact it from his neighbour or his brother, because it's called the Eternal's release. Of a foreigner you may exact it again, but that which is yours and your brother's, your hand shall release, to the end that there shall be no poor among you. For the Eternal shall greatly bless you in the land that the Eternal your God gives you for inheritance to possess it. So the sabbatical year is more than just the resting of the land. It's the case that the debt is released as well. The principal amount, the actual capital amount is released. There's no interest anyway within God's system. And yet at the same time it also makes the Commonwealth of Israel central, and at the same time you've got the other nations round about where you can charge usury, then you can also exact it again. And they all want to be part of the Commonwealth of Israel. And that is, in the way, as far as we can tell, is the way in which the kingdom of God will then spread across the entire earth until all nations are coming under that jurisdiction and government. And it says in verse 7, it says, if there is among you a poor man of one of your brethren, the eternal your God gives you, that you shouldn't harden your heart or shut your hand from your poor brother. It says, but you shall open your hand wide to him and shall surely lend him. Even if the sabbatical year is coming up, you still lend. It's still a way of give. It's an outgoing concern that is necessary there. And within this also, within this system, and I wouldn't be at all surprised, in fact, I'd be very, very surprised if it doesn't happen, slavery is actually part of it. As it says in verse 12, it says, and if your brother, a Hebrew man or a Hebrew woman, is sold to you and serves you 6 years, in the seventh year you'll let him go free. So again, the slavery was only for 6 years maximum. In the seventh year he went free. And when you send him out free from you, you shall not let him go empty-handed. So during the time that the slave goes, if somebody falls under hard times, can't go ahead and pay their bills, gets into a real mess financially, has to sell himself and his presumably wife and family into slavery, and becomes the property of somebody else. Somebody who is rich enough to actually own a slave, a servant. But that person then becomes his mentor. Somebody who has the nous and the savvy to be able to correctly handle his money, and therefore becomes a mentor to that individual. And by the time the sabbatical year comes along, is then let back into society again, having been trained by the person that he's been working for. It's a beautiful system. It's not the slavery as it was in days gone by, and with, as far as the British Empire and the American plantations are concerned. But it says that you will furnish him liberally out of your flock and your herds, and you'll give him what he needs at that particular time. And if you go over to Deuteronomy 23, we find in verse 19, it says, you will not lend upon usury. So interest was banned. The whole of society today is based on interest. It's on usury. Everything, the whole financial system is based on debt. But in God's system, you will not lend upon usury to your brother, usury of money, usury of victuals, usury of anything that is lent upon usury. To a stranger you may lend upon usury, and that is interest, basically. It's not excessive interest. It just has no bearing on its excessive interest. Usury in the English language means excessive interest. It doesn't mean that in the Hebrew. It is just interest. You don't lend on that way. And that your eternal your God may bless you in all that you set your hand in your land, that where you go to possess it. And here in Deuteronomy, the final one in Deuteronomy, verse 24. When you come into your neighbor's vineyard, then you may eat grapes to your fill at your own pleasure. So this is not somebody who is harvesting the corners of his fields. That's not the case. It's, if you're in somebody's vineyard, you can go ahead and you can eat the fruit. You know, scrumping apples was not a sin. You know, scrumping apples in, I don't know, do you use the term scrumping apples? No, obviously not. Scrumping apples means pinching apples, means stealing apples in the UK. And basically, as children, we would go down and we'd scrump apples. And normally they were so sour you could hardly eat them. And you can tell that I did that. But, you know, taking apples like that is not a crime as far as God's system is concerned. It says, when you come into your neighbor's vineyard, then you can eat grapes to your fill at your own pleasure. But you shouldn't put anything into a vessel. You don't take them with you. So that would be stealing. That would be theft. That would be scrumping. When you come into your standing corn of your neighbor, then you may pluck the ears with your hand, but you shall not move a sickle into your neighbor's standing corn. So if you need to have something for, you need some bread one evening, you can go ahead and you can pluck it by hand, but you mustn't use a sickle on it. You can put it in your pockets or whatever else, take it back, grind it up, make your bread. That's perfectly permissible. It's not theft.
But you see the state of mind, you see the outgoing way of life. And you see how that outgoing way of life and that mentality that the king priest will be teaching will put a stop to Kabira.
It'll put a stop to Kabira. And so if we turn finally to Micah 4. Hosea, Joel, Amos, Obadiah, Jonah, Micah, Nahum. Micah 4, verse 1. But in the last days it will come to pass that the mountain, that's the government, and as I say, it's government and education, the government of the house of the Eternal, will be established in the top of the governments, and it shall be exalted above the hills, all the smaller provincial governments, and people will flow to it. As I say, it's going to be a commonwealth of Israel, and people are going to be flowing to that commonwealth of Israel because of the laws, because of the implementation of those laws. And when many nations shall come and say, come and let us go to the mountain of the Eternal and to the house of the God of Jacob, and he will teach us of his ways. It's king, priests, it's government and education. The education is necessary. He'll teach us of his ways. We'll walk in his paths, for the law shall go forth of Zion, and the word of the Eternal from Jerusalem. We will be based in Jerusalem, as the church, as the bride of Christ. And we will then take it to the areas of across this earth to stop the Kabiras of this world in dead in their tracks. It just simply will not be possible to have when the laws of God are faithfully applied. And he will judge among many people, rebuke strong nations afar off, and they'll beat their swords to plowshares, their spears to pruning hooks. Nation shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war any more. But they shall sit every man under his own vine and under his own fig tree. Because it's going to be a family-based land system, land ownership. And that will then put a stop to the prostitution. It'll put a stop to so many of the problems that we saw in the film. But he'll sit every man under his own vine and under his own fig tree, and none shall make them afraid, for the mouth of the Eternal has spoken. For all people may walk every man in the name of his God. And the God of this world, and the broadcast that comes from that God of this world, produces the ideas that you find in Kabira. Everybody clambering over everybody else to get as much as they possibly can. And they walk in the name of their God. Their God, this broadcaster, with this attitude of mind, that is what we're looking at today. But we will walk in the name of the Eternal, our God, forever and ever. Eternity. That's what we're looking for. That's the solution to Kabira.